Hello, welcome to the February month of 2022, where we're talking about Google Cloud Security this month. Yes, last month was Identity Access Management, and this month we're talking about Google Cloud Security. To kick this off, we had Jason Dyke from Block or Square come and talk about automating security in Google Cloud. We spoke about all things automation and why do you need it, but also we also got into what are some of the features in Google Cloud that offer security natively, and at what point do you identify a gap and probably have to go down the path of using open source, automation, what's involved in starting to do some automation in Google Cloud, what are some of the services that you could use to perform automation. We also have examples of some of the open source projects that Jason himself has been working on that have been as a result of the gaps that he's identified in Google Cloud. So overall, a jam-packed interview with a lot of gems just being dropped around Google Cloud security and how to automate that, with a lot of questions and comments coming in through the live chat as well. So feel free to kind of check that as well. And if you find this would be valuable for someone who is in your friend circle or your colleague who is trying to learn about Google Cloud, either because their company has acquired a company which is on running on Google Cloud, or they just happen to be interested in learning about Google Cloud, definitely share this episode with them. And as always, while you're there, if you want to leave us a review or a rating, we'll appreciate that. iTunes and Spotify both take ratings these days. Anything that you can do to help us spread the word and allow me to help more people, that would be really appreciated. So thank you so much for hanging out with us as well. I am looking forward to an entire month of Google Cloud Security and share all that knowledge with you. So this was the first episode in many more to come. Enjoy the episode and I'll talk to you next episode. Peace.
As companies expand to the cloud, asset visibility worsens. The Jupiter One Cyber Asset Management Platform helps you get it back. Jupiter One provides context, understanding, and visibility into your entire cyber asset attack surface with over 150 integrations, including AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, and more. Jupiter One helps you answer complex security and infrastructure questions, understand the contextual relationships between assets, and build the foundation for your security program. Try it for yourself. Get started with your free Jupiter One account today.
How do you get your cloud security news without scouring the internet for hours? I normally just head to Cloud Security News to get my weekly update on what's most popular in the cloud security world. If you are interested in this, check out Cloud Security News on all popular podcast platforms or on www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv. Hey, how's it going, Jason? Welcome.
Hey, thanks. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, not a problem, man. I was looking forward to this because I've been trying to talk about Google Cloud Security for so long and been looking for people. So I'm excited about this particular month and I'm glad I have you to kick it off for me. So maybe a good place to start could be, man, if you can tell us a bit about yourself, how you got into the whole cloud security space, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think I had probably a non-traditional route to getting into cloud security. I actually went to college for marketing. So I'm a business student traditionally. So I have a bachelor's in marketing. And that might actually be probably a little bit more common than people realize, that you don't have to have a specific degree to get into cloud security. And I definitely never, this is what I would be doing as a career. But so yeah, I originally started in business and I was really into marketing. And once I graduated, I really started to get more involved in just computers, doing things on computers. And my first kind of real gig in the tech industry was being a QA analyst. So doing a lot of quality assurance work. So that's where I started, was doing QA, and then migrated over to kind of the IT world, doing a lot of data center work, systems administration. Mm-hmm. And then from there, started to get into this new thing called the cloud. So I started to learn about, I started on the AWS, learning just pretty much everything I could, just trying to soak it all in and doing a lot of like solutions architect type work. And mm-hmm. from there, started to migrate over to cloud and got into doing consulting, security consulting. Mm-hmm. And that's where I picked up GCP. And that's kind of where I've been ever since, doing like Google Cloud Security.
Interesting. And definitely fascinating that you got in from marketing, because I would always think people have some kind of a unique background. Like I'm surprised. I've got people who have actually turned from a legal career onto cloud security as well. So like that, I mean, yeah, but it's a definitely really interesting and probably an inspiration for a lot of people who might be thinking, I need a technical degree to get into cloud or anything. So that's definitely possible. So I guess probably the first question and pathway into this as well, because it seems like you've done a few consulting gigs as well. So you can talk about from that perspective as well. It's kind of is my first question, because a lot of people don't even know what kind of projects people run on Google Cloud. Like, I think the one that people keep hearing is like, oh, we use BigQuery because Google Cloud is great for data analysis and all. Do people use it for anything else? Like, I'm just curious, what kind of projects people run on it?
Yeah, so if you're at an organization, sometimes you don't have a choice. If you work at a company and they have contracts with AWS or GCP, you don't really have a choice where you can build on.
Yeah.
You're pretty much, if you're doing work for your job, you have to work with whatever platform is really available to you. But if you could have a choice, GCP is typically commonly used for what you mentioned, BigQuery, so lots of data analytics, they do that particularly well. They also do a lot of machine learning. So in particularly around the managed machine learning offerings.
Right.
So those are one of their huge strong suits. So you see a lot of personal projects or organizations, if they're on GCP, it's usually based around machine learning. They also, of course, GKE, which is Google Kubernetes Engine. Kubernetes is one of their strong suits as well. So you see a lot of container-based workloads on GCP, but they also have Cloud Run. So if you need to, maybe you don't want to run Kubernetes clusters, but you have a containerized workload, you can run it on Cloud Run, which is like a serverless, a way to use containers. So honestly, there's not like one type of workload you'll see on GCP. They have offerings for pretty much every. It's really, it comes down to sometimes what is your company use. If you're working at an organization where they only allow you to use one platform, you don't really get a choice. But all the cloud providers pretty much provide, no pun intended, similar offerings. And it's whatever you're familiar with. That's usually the one that people gravitate towards.
Sweet. And maybe, so let's start with the build foundations then, I guess. So to your point about, I guess most people over here listening in definitely have a choice of Google Cloud. And from that perspective, what are some of the building blocks for people trying to get started with Google Cloud security automation? What are some of the things they're looking at that, hey, what is available in Google Cloud for me to kind of use as building foundations to do some kind of work?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you're kind of just starting on the platform and looking to get into automation, really IAM, Identity and Access Management, is the foundation for pretty much every cloud, whether it's AWS or GCP or Azure, Oracle Cloud, who knows. So you really want to have a really strong understanding of how IAM works and the right ways to do it. So you don't want to use like long-lived static credentials. So GCP offers this feature slash service called Workload Identity Federation, which pretty much allows you to use ephemeral short-lived credentials no matter where you are. So if you want to do automation in, let's say, GitHub Actions, you can connect your GitHub action to your GCP environment without using a long-lived credential. Create a short-lived credential, whether it's OpenID Connect or it just depends upon what you're familiar with. So really having a strong base with IAM, I think is huge to get started with automation. It might not seem like that, but knowing the best ways to interact with your environment is a good step to do it safely. Outside of IAM, I would say you want to do things that revolve around serverless workloads, because if you're doing security automation, for example, you typically wouldn't want to have your infrastructure continuously running, because that's going to cost you a lot of money if it's not doing anything. And that's one of the main benefits of serverless, is that you really only pay for what you're using when it's running. Of course, there's other small charges, but specifically around networking. But really the huge benefit of serverless when it comes to security automation is that you only pay when it's executed, when it's running. And hopefully it's not running all the time, otherwise you might have a lot of things that need investigated going on in your environment. But if I had to pick two things, I would say you'd want to look into IAM, make sure you have a good grasp on that. Yep. And then also look at the different types of serverless offerings on GCP, whether it's Cloud Functions or Cloud Run, and really kind of understand what you're trying to accomplish and which one fits your use case the best.
Yeah, and those are definitely great foundational pieces to start off with as well. So, and I imagine as you kind of like build on top of this, I think I remember from one of your talk, you kind of spoke about policy code and CSPM and all that as well. So how does that all of that fit into like the whole, I guess, building blocks of security automation?
Yeah, that's also a really good question too, because before you can start thinking about automating security, you want to really lay out, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to prevent things from happening, or are you okay with reacting to them happening and then doing automation off of that? So policy as code or embedding security in like your CI/CD pipelines can be looked at as a type of preventative security, because you're trying to catch things before they're deployed. Yeah. So and that's the area you'd probably want to look at first, because really why react to something if you can prevent it from happening? It might seem common sense, but you can only work with the tools that are out there unless you want to build something yourself. So you can't prevent really every scenario as much as you'd like to. 100% coverage is very difficult to. So there is a place for reactive automation, especially when it comes to security, because somebody might not be using the deployment pipelines where you have your security embedded. Maybe they do something through the console for some reason. So that's where the reactive security comes in, reactive automation, because you can't have every solution embedded in a CI/CD pipeline, continuous integration, continuous deploy. So reactive security, it has its uses and it definitely has its benefits.
And does GCP have like native controls to kind of support these things as well? I think because you did an open source project around this space as well, where because to your point, 100% prevention is better than cure. With the GCP native controls, kind of like all the remain. How much of that is part of this? I'm assuming they have native controls for these kind of things as well.
They absolutely do. Yeah. So for preventative, we could talk about that for a little bit. They have this offering called organization policy constraints, and those are really strong preventative controls in GCP. They're kind of stronger, if you will, than IAM, meaning regardless if a person has a permission to do something, if there is an organization org policy constraint in place, that will prevent it from happening regardless of the permissions they have. So that's a really powerful tool that you have available to you for a preventative control, because you can kind of set things like no public buckets, for example, and you can apply that to all of your projects. And even if somebody has the permissions, the ability to make a bucket public, they wouldn't be able to because that org policy is in place preventing that. So org policy constraints, those are really big when it comes to preventative. And as far as reactive, GCP has a free tier and a premium tier of something called the Security Command Center. And the Security Command Center, you can think of it kind of like it encompasses a bunch of other security services underneath it. One of those is called Security Health Analytics. And that is all based around kind of security misconfigurations, if you want to look at it like that. So the Security Command Center, it will surface a bunch of monitors and alerts for you about the state of your resources. So, and they're typically benched off CIS. So if you're familiar with kind of that, those security benchmarks, best practices. So they'll follow the CIS recommendations of the best way to configure your resources, and will surface an alert to you, which then you can act on it however you really want to. You could forward it to PubSub topic, and then from there, send it to a cloud function to go out and maybe reverse that configuration that was put in place. So that's an example of a reactive kind of cloud native control that you have available to you. And there is a free tier as well. There's a premium tier, which has obviously a bunch more checks because they have to provide value for charging for that. But there is a free tier. So anyone that's interested in checking it out, you can actually kind of boot that up and take a
look. Right. And how does it, all of that fit into the automation side of things, I guess? Because I imagine you can turn them on without, say, for example, you just signed up with the new organization. Every time a new project gets added, the organization rules would, policies would obviously get automatically applied. And similar to that would be the command center as well. Or, I mean, I'm assuming there's more as well in this. Those are just the foundational ones.
Yeah, so there is a concept of resource hierarchy in GCP, and you can think of it like a folder or a directory structure in Windows or Mac, where you have folders inside of folders, and inside of those folders is where you have what's called a project in GCP, which is synonymous with your account. That's where your resources run. And one of the really neat things that GCP does is it has that hierarchy. And if you apply an org policy, for example, on a folder, all of the projects that are currently in the folder and all future projects that might get created, it inherit that org policy and those restrictions. All so right. The higher up in the org structure, or the tree, if you will, that you apply an organization policy, the more projects and folders that it will affect currently and anything in the future. So it's a unique scenario where you can have more restrictive folders that have more restrictive org policies that let you do less. Maybe it's a production environment. You want to have more restrictive security controls in place versus like a development or a sandbox environment where you want your programmers or developers or whoever, maybe your data analytics folks, to be able to have more control and be able to do more things. So you can do that on a folder level. So that's a really cool thing that GCP does, is this thing called a resource hierarchy. So that kind of answers the question about like, how does it get applied? Really, it depends upon where you want to apply it. If you want to apply it higher up, it's going to affect more resources. How it works with automation, we could talk about the Security Command Center. There's this concept called a filter, and that's pretty much synonymous with any cloud platform. And it allows you to specify the different types of log events that you want to look for. And when a finding is generated in the Security Command Center, it's a specific type of audit log, a specific type of log is generated, and you can set your filter to look for those specific log events and then forward them along to what's called a PubSub topic, which is really, it's kind of like a queuing service. So it's a way to decouple your services so that if you had a huge influx of alerts, it wouldn't overwhelm your serverless functions because it sits in a queue waiting to get picked up. So that's kind of how it all fits together from an automation standpoint.
It's pretty cool. It's funny, as you were saying this, and because I started my career in AWS first, everything you're saying is like, yeah, organization policy, there's an organization, there's an SC, the log filter, there is something called Event Bridge in AWS, which is very similar. Then there is the PubSub has this equivalent of SQS, I think they call it, LCQS, query queuing service. Yes, it's almost like there's a, to your point, same but different, I guess. Like it's almost like, oh yeah, I could do that, I could, yeah, I can, we can definitely look at that as well. And to your point about applying it at a folder level, there's an organization unit concept under organization in AWS as well. So for people who may be coming in from that, I mean, I believe it's a similar concept in Azure with subscriptions, but I don't think they have like the policy model. But it's really interesting, man. I think I guess people for coming from another cloud provider, they will hear this and go, oh yeah, I can relate, very similar. So if I were to kind of look at Google Cloud tomorrow, maybe I can just get some hang of it. What about people coming from on-premise world? If Google Cloud was the first cloud they were moving into, how different Google Cloud would be? How would you explain it to someone who's probably coming from on-premise rather than from another cloud provider?
Yeah, that's something that I've have a lot of experience with doing consulting work. You work with a lot of companies that are interested in migrating their workloads from like an on-prem, quote unquote. That word typically means like a data center, not necessarily in their office, where you think like on-prem, oh, that's their office. No, it's usually a data center. But when you're kind of transitioning to thinking about security in the cloud, there is a concept of like the shared responsibility model. Yep. And really what it comes down to is I would recommend anyone listening that's starting to think about cloud security is thinking about how you can offload the responsibility of security as much as possible to the CSP, the cloud service provider. So in this case, Google. Mm-hmm. And what that means in practice is that you want Google to run as much as the infrastructure as possible versus you being responsible for everything that runs in the cloud. So a good example is that is if it's easier said than done. You'd want to say, you know, make everything serverless. That way you don't have to be only responsible for the code, your code quality, make sure there's no bugs in your code, make sure your packages are up to date. But in reality, coming from an on-premise world, that's much more difficult to transition from virtual machines to workloads running in serverless. So you really do start usually with VMs, compute instances running in GCP. The service is called GCE. Everything pretty much starts with a G because Google. So Google Compute Engine. Yeah. And really, you're responsible for your application security. You're responsible for the operating system. But what you're not responsible for is the security of the hypervisor, the server that actually runs all of your virtual machines like on top of it. So if you're running in a data center, you might be responsible for the hypervisor's security as well. But in GCP and all the clouds, really the CSP, the service provider, is the one that's responsible for the hypervisor. So depending upon which type of service you're using, your area of responsibility when it comes to security varies. If you're running VMs, you have the most responsibility when it comes to security because you're responsible for the operating systems, all of the workloads running inside the VM. If you're running in something that's like serverless, you're really only responsible for the code itself. You're not responsible for the hypervisor. You're not responsible for the VMs that are really running your workloads. So depending upon what service you're using, your level of responsibility when it comes to security varies. And it's really all comes down to like the word responsibility, what you're responsible for.
Yeah, and I think I'll be curious for people who are listening in as well, the 100 odd people who are listening right now, if anyone has any opinion on the migration challenges. But I always find the point about the shared responsibility, even though it's such a very, like we all talk about, I still find a lot of people still don't know how much responsibility do they have and why maybe something like serverless may be a great option, but to your point, may not be the first option you should go for because you just would not understand it. And you go, like blowing my mind too much. But yeah, if anyone has an opinion on how their, I guess, first experience with GCP would have been, I'd love to hear that as well in the comment section. I've got a comment here from Tom, which I want to just definitely address. So love to see good automation take care of mundane tasks that we're analysts out so they can focus on incidents and have the information they need automatically pulled into the investigation. Any examples that you may have seen of this in the wild, Jason? that you can share for Tom?
It's a great point. And like you mentioned previously, you want to prevent the mundane, like reactive tasks from even happening. But that's in a perfect world, that would be you'd have every scenario covered. But we're in reality here, and you do have to react to a lot of events because you just can't prevent them from happening with the tools that are available to you. Or maybe you don't want to prevent it from happening every single time, but you want to look into why it's happening. And maybe there's an exception process in place. So a really good kind of example of mundane tasks is I've seen really nice setups, and I've set some of them up myself, is actually automating like ticket creation when something happens in the cloud. And in the ticket, like we'll just use Jira, for example, because that's a really popular like ticketing solution. So normally when, if you don't have something, your analyst would have to dig into the logs, look for the specific log event. Like if somebody, we'll just use the bucket example, because that's really easy for a lot of people to conceptualize and visualize. If somebody makes a bucket public, maybe you have some type of alert that goes off and all it says is a bucket was made public here. The analyst would have to, or whoever is responding to that, would have to like open up the console, type in a log filter or scan for that specific log event. They would need to get project ID, the resource name, the person that made it public so that they can reach out and talk to them. You can automate that with a lot of open source tools where that log event gets captured with a log filter, it gets sent to a PubSub topic, it gets sent to like a cloud function, and that cloud function can create a Jira ticket automatically. And in like the description of the Jira ticket, it can put all of that valuable information for an analyst. It's right there. They don't have to log in to look at it. They can, you know, reach out to an individual and talk to them about it. Or you can even go a step further and have it actually like Slack or Teams or message that individual that made it public and say, hey, did you mean to make this public? Yes, no, this wasn't me. You can do like Slack bot commands, and you can automate it through there. You can do like automation through chat ops is like one of the hot topics right now. So that's just an example that I've seen of how like security automation can kind of make analysts' lives a little bit easier.
It's pretty awesome, man. That's a great example. Darpin has a comment as well. Even it being shared responsibility, it's important to learn, get visibility. How is it managed by the CSP on their end? I think that's actually true as well, because I think to your point about what we spoke about, the visibility and the shared responsibility part, there is a management part as well. Like how much of it is managed by the cloud provider versus how much is not. Like the patching piece is covered by the Google Clouds of the world, and they're looking at functions, but not necessarily not me, because there's a virtual machine component in Google Cloud, right? Well, that's really how oblivious I am about it. Is there a
virtual? Yeah, it's Google Compute Engine. It kind of brings me back to when I was studying for some of my Google Cloud certs. This shared responsibility is really kind of a key component of some of their like certifications and studying for it, is knowing which type of service they give you example, like which type of service, if you're using a cloud function, what are you responsible for? Like that's just a generic question that they ask. And it really goes back to, if you're using like infrastructure as a service, you'll see that abbreviation. It's really common. It's IaaS. Whether you're using like functions there's like everything as a service now, but in GCP, it's like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, functions as a service. So they have all of these different as a service offerings.
Right.
And for each one, there's a breakdown you can find in their documentation that says, if you're using infrastructure as a service, here are the customer's responsibilities. And they like list out like patching the OS, the application's code, and this is what we, Google, are responsible for. So it's public knowledge. It's in the documentation. You should be able to just search like GCP shared responsibility. It'll look like a line. It'll be like a line graph where it says IaaS, FAS, PaaS, and it'll say, here's the responsibilities.
Yeah, I think, well, it's funny because I think I've been recently exposed to all three cloud through my actual work. So it's definitely something, a bit of a learning curve for me there as well. Actually, I've got someone else is here. So I believe that's Kat Traxler. Hey, Kat. She's also an ex-guest. Actually, no question, just a hello and a big thank you to Jason and the other open source project creators in cloud. With people like you guys sacrificing evening and weekends, our community would be on Stone Age. So big thanks. That's Kat for you, man. Kat's pretty awesome. Kat, I'm sure Jason appreciates it as well.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Kat is, she's big in the open source space as well. We've kind of bounced ideas off of each other. So it's a tight-knit community in open source, and really anyone can get involved. That's kind of the beauty of it. One of the first like open source quote-unquote projects that I worked on was really something that I leveraged to learn how to code in Python. So probably maybe 3 years ago 2 and a half. So when I started like really thinking about, I should really start learning how to code if I want, you know, be as best as I can in the security space. It's not a requirement by any means, but it's always been something that I've wanted to try and have just kept putting it off because maybe fear of the unknown. And I didn't like feeling like I didn't know anything. And that's really what happens when you start learning how to code. You're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And so one of the first open source projects I did was really something that I just leveraged to learn how to code in Python. And it's really that easy to get involved. It's if you have an idea, you can kind of check and see if anyone else has done it. If they have before, you can, if it's open source, you can do a pull request or try to do any types of new features. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the open source community is going to turn you down for additional test cases. So there's always more room for tests. So if you're looking to get started in open source, maybe running some test cases, open source apps, it's definitely appreciated.
And I mean, we definitely need to talk about your open source projects as well. So we'll definitely get into that. So Ken, thank you for that, Kat. For Kapil here as well, building a culture is also an important factor when you're trying to automate security. Would you agree or any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in an organization, like if you're some orgs, they're maybe not as open to their employees working in open source, maybe you're restricted from doing it. That's just an unfortunate nature of some companies. They don't want their employees working on open source because maybe they want all of their effort to work on their products. So you will find that, but more likely than not, a lot of companies really do support people working in open source. And whether you're making it open source under your organization's kind of domain or you're doing it on your spare, there's the company that you work for really has to have like a positive culture towards open source.
Yeah, right. I mean, even from an automation, yeah. I imagine traditional security teams would just be like, why are you automating it? ClickOps is so much better. Like, look at me clicking through this.
It's a constant battle is why automation? And especially in the security space, because some people, rightfully so, are maybe a little bit concerned about automating security when it comes to automating like remediations, like automatically changing how your resources are configured, that it can be risky because it's tough to think of all the different use cases for why somebody might configure something a specific way, for example. And if you're saying that if you build your automation to be anytime you see this event happen, reverse, you could actually be breaking people's workloads. You could be causing downtime by doing that. So automated remediation might not always be the first thing you should try doing. I always recommend running things kind of in like dry mode, if you will, where it doesn't actually act. It will just surface alerts and say, hey, we found this thing happened. We would have taken this action. And then you could have a human say, yes, go ahead and do that. Or you could, you know, just say, thanks, I'll kind of resolve it myself. So getting people to do like automated security is definitely a culture thing. Because like you said, some people are more comfortable doing things in the console. And that's okay if it works for your company or for your team and you're making sure that you're not burning out your analysts or your security people. But I would recommend looking into automating as much security as you can so that you can spend more time doing other things.
Automate all the mundane tasks. Yeah, it's almost like a no-brainer sometimes, but it's not common enough knowledge, I would have thought. Who knew? What a question from Pani. Pani's asking, on-premise versus cloud, which one do you reckon is a better place in terms of security automation and security in general?
Well, I mean, I'm a little biased since I work in the cloud. So I like the flexibility that the cloud provides. I have done work on VMs and physical servers running in a data center, and automating tasks is absolutely doable. You are just responsible for a lot more when it comes to like the upkeep and the ongoing maintenance. It's a lot of like bash scripts and cron jobs and kind of, you're not able to leverage like the serverless technologies that the cloud offers, which really shine when it comes to automating security. So I would say doing security automation is easier in the cloud. Better is a subjective term because you can make either work for all of your workloads. It really depends upon what you're trying to accomplish. So I would say doing automation in the cloud is generally just easier than on-prem. You have way more services and features that are offered to you. And some are geared towards automation versus on-prem where it's a lot of physical server and you're kind of stitching together different bash scripts or different types of Python scripts, whatever coding language you work in. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a little bit more work over time, kind of in my opinion.
Oh, actually, that's an interesting segue into the next one then. So, because I guess the question that keeps popping up at this point in time, if there are so many automation capabilities in a Google Cloud kind of service, similar to AWS and other folks as well, at what point would people kind of switch to like, oh, I need more than a Google native security tool? Like we've spoke about Command Center, we spoke about it has PubSub, it has all these log filter as well. And sometimes the skill set may not exist in the team, but you almost have to wonder that, okay, so should I just stick to the services that are from my cloud provider? Or at what point am I flicking off to like, oh, I need like an open source tool for this? Oh, by the way, Fanny said thank you as well. Hey, thanks, Fanny. So we've gone through this question. What's that impasse that we'll be like, oh, I think this is not good enough for me. I need to go into an open source space.
Well, open source is by no means an expert at open source, but I found myself using it to kind of fill the gaps of what the cloud provider like doesn't provide. Every cloud provider, especially GCP, is very receptive to feedback and ways that they can improve their offerings and their services. It just might take a little bit longer for them to implement what you're asking for. And I think that's where open source shines, is that you're able to go from like idea to kind of deployment in a very rapid time. And you can kind of outsource, quote unquote, a lot of that work. You open source it, a lot of other people from all over the world can help build it. And you're able to get, like I said, get that idea and get it actually implemented a little bit quicker than like Google or Amazon or really any of the cloud providers can. So I use it kind of as like a way to fill the gaps. And until the cloud provider provides it for you, that's really where I've seen it really shine and where I've kind of leveraged it the most. But there's also a room for SaaS providers, software as a service, security providers as well, where they are really useful. If maybe you don't have a large security team, it's a way for you to have a security footprint in with a smaller team, because you're kind of offloading that to some software provider where they will run your security kind of quote unquote for you, or at least find the things that you need to look into and expose them to you in an easier way versus you having to build it. So I think there's a use case for all three, whether it's cloud native, open source, or like a enterprise SaaS product. They all have different purposes and they all kind of fill gaps in different spaces.
Right. And so are there common examples of gaps that you kind of see that where you had to go down the open source path? And I'm obviously hinting towards a couple of open source projects that you started. What were the gaps that you noticed and what made you go down that open source path?
There was an open source project that I had created called Project Lockdown. And I actually created that before we went into lockdown for COVID. So it just happened, the name lined up like that. That was not done on purpose. But the reason I called it Lockdown is because it was security and it was automated remediations. So it was a way to kind of lock down your project. It was just a cool, I think, pun that I built into the name. But GCP at the time didn't have an easy way to automate like remediations, quote unquote remediations. And what I mean by that is GCP has a way to surface when things happen, who did it, when, where, how, but they at the time didn't have a way for you to immediately reverse that action. So if somebody created something in an insecure way, there was no way for you to code in and say, well, delete it if you see this happening. Right. So that was why I had created Project when I was doing consulting work for this company called ScaleSec. And it was a way for me to build in this missing feature from GCP, where the cloud native platform, it didn't provide a way for you to automate security things. And so I said, well, I'll just kind of build it myself and also learn Python in the meantime. So it was a selfish way for me to train myself to learn Python, but also in a way for me to kind of give back to the community, because I use open source tools all the time and might not necessarily have the time or even the knowledge to be able to provide and to add new features to the products that I use. So it was just a cool, all around cool opportunity for me to kind of give back. And even if one person found it useful, like it was worth it for me. So that Project Lockdown, the open source, was a way for me to again, fill the gap. GCP didn't provide automating remediations from a security standpoint. So I'll just build it myself. That's easier said than done. And maybe not everybody has the time to be able to do that. I fully recognize that. So I'm definitely not going out and saying, well, everyone can do automation, because it's a lot of time and effort, especially when you try to do open source. So yeah, that was where a Project Lockdown kind of came out.
Yep. And there was another one for IAM, I think you've created recently.
Yeah. That was something that I actually released this week. So that was, it's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. And it is a way to monitor when IAM roles are being changed. And you have to think of the way that the cloud providers do IAM is they provide like job function type roles. So if you're at a company and you are like a network administrator, GCP will provide you with a role that has permissions that are all about managing a network, being an administrator of a network. So it's an easy way for you to kind of assign as close to least privilege as they can. And you can never really get to least privilege. It's always like a goal. It's a destination. So, but these roles are really meant to be like job function type roles, where if you're a network admin, there's a network admin role, but that role is, the permissions inside that role are managed by Google. So they can add permissions to it, but they can also remove permissions. And they do have a release notes page that tells you, hey, these are the roles that have changed. These are the permissions that have been added or removed or like deprecated. Because that does happen, but that doesn't get exposed to you in real time or close to real time. Maybe it's once a week they'll release something that says, hey, in the past week or the past 2 weeks, here are all the changes that have happened in IAM. But this week I had open sourced something that really tweets whenever it finds updates to these IAM roles, because I think it's important to know that if you're using one of those, it's called a predefined role. If you're using like network admin and you assign it to a user, those permissions could change. They could have new permissions added to it and you might not know. So their kind of permissions gets larger over time as that role is adjusted by Google, because they're the ones that manage it. So the whole idea was like, let's shed light and let's expose, and not necessarily expose as if that's a bad thing, but put a spotlight on when these roles are being updated. There's a similar tool out there for AWS. It's all on Twitter. It's just really cool stuff. So that's really where the idea came from is, hey, I've used this in AWS a bunch of times. Let's create one for GCP. I had like forked up an open source repository and really leveraged their scripts. That's this company called Darkbit, got purchased by Aqua. So really everybody's here kind of connected. We all know each other in a small way. So yeah, I really leveraged their automation that they had already built and did some things through GitHub Actions. And now it like tweets every time that there's a role update, but I had to scale it back a little bit because I was tweeting too often. And my API key got suspended because it like was a new account and it was tweeting all the time. So I had to scale it back a little bit after talking to the support folks over at Twitter. So it's not real time, but it's like every 4 or 6 hours. And I might even change it to 12 hours because it's still like going crazy.
Oh, fair enough. So because we kind of have laid out some of those things where, okay, so there might be gaps that people may identify as they kind of go through that journey of automating security in cloud. And there are some open source tools available for this as well. I'm wondering from a monitoring perspective, like people who may be listening to this and going, okay, if I have a mix of, which is I imagine the case in the AWS space, like what are some of the monitoring challenges that you see from a security perspective in Google Cloud? And is that also automated? I feel like the auto remediation part kind of comes in there where you can take that path, auto remediate, you detect something, oh, IAM role changed. Suddenly Ashish is an admin and I shut that down. What's the other alternative monitoring in Google Cloud kind of space?
Well, when it comes to monitoring, I think you should really think about what are you trying to monitor for? What are your risks and what are your threats whenever you're running workloads? And based off that, you create monitors for it. So, I mean, of course, if you monitored for every single thing that happened in your account, that's a lot of noise. Like the data is available to you. Google has a really strong logging offering and the logs are enriched with a lot of details inside of it. So the data is there for you. It's really about figuring out what do I care enough about to monitor for and alert based off of that. So one of the challenges that I've seen is knowing even what to look for. And that's where a lot of these like open source things like CIS, you start with like CIS, which are like best practice recommendations, and you start monitoring just for those. And then maybe you build additional like custom monitors based on maybe what your organization cares about the most. Then you like add those on top. Maybe you remove some of this like CIS recommendations that you don't care about. So really it's about figuring out like, what do I care about enough to monitor for? Because the data is there for you.
Yeah, and to your point, this is kind of like the same, and we kind of come back to the same conversation about CSPM as well. It's that point, how much do you want to actively monitor yourself versus just use a tool if you have the budget for it? Use a CSPM to at least get that initial understanding of what else should I be looking for in Google. Has the CSPM space evolved enough to, because I keep seeing them talk about Google Cloud, but in a limited capacity always. Is that still the case or has that changed?
Yeah, I'm smiling because it's absolutely the experience that I've had is that AWS, rightfully so, is kind of customer number one when you're build cloud security posture management tool, like a CSPM. Yeah. Naturally, that's where I started. That's where a lot of people start. That's where a lot of companies start. Yeah. And majority of people that are listening have probably started in AWS. I'm making a generalization assumption, but the CSPM space is rightfully so kind of geared towards AWS first and foremost, because that's normally where they make the most of their money. GCP and Azure kind of in a second. But from my experience, lots of these like enterprise security tools are very receptive again to, if you run on GCP there, you can submit feature requests and they'll jump right on it because they're providing a service to you. But yeah, from my experience, AWS is definitely the one that gets kind of the most love when it comes to the CSPM tools, but there are a lot out there that are focused on, they do all three, the big three really well. It's evolved that GCP has pretty decent coverage now. So if you're looking for like a posture management tool out there that works with GCP, the space has gotten a lot better in the past couple of years, to answer your question.
Yeah, perfect. I'll be curious to see and hear from other people in the remaining 100 people watching if they have an experience in CSPM and Google Cloud as well. Tom has another question. What excites you about the future Google Cloud? Are there any innovation in the pipeline to separate GCP from the crowd?
Ooh, the future of Google Cloud. Well, Cloud Run is a service that I'm really high. It's a way for you to run like containerized workloads, but you don't have to manage any of the underlying like compute that runs your containers. So in containers, you can run on lots of different services. You can run containers on bare metal servers. You can run them on virtual machines. You can run them on serverless functions even. But Cloud Run is a service that I think has a really bright future. It's definitely, it doesn't get talked about, I think, enough. But I think that that's something that really excites me about Google Cloud. And I'm really into all of their like data analytics tools that they have. I think BigQuery is just an amazing service at the scale that it operates at. Kind of on the database side, that's not necessarily security focused, but BigQuery has some really cool security features like column and row level security. So you can really kind of lock down and control what type of data is displayed to the people that are running queries against your database. So kind of Cloud Run, BigQuery, Cloud Spanner is a really like mind-boggling global scale database, which conceptually thinking about how that operates is just, I don't even understand how it works behind the scenes. But it's really cool that they can operate that and they can, it's so easy to onboard and leverage that. And I don't work for Google. I think those are just the things that I'm really excited about for the future.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. Hopefully that answers your question as well, Tom. I think I've got a question from Mani about API security best practices, but I've got a whole month coming up with it. But if you have some thoughts on API security, feel free to drop them.
Yeah. This is actually a pretty tough topic for me because I don't have kind of a traditional like developer programmer background. So APIs to me were pretty new whenever I started thinking about how like getting into the cloud. The concept of an API was completely foreign to me because I have a traditional IT background. So my exposure to API started when I started with cloud, and I'm absolutely not an API security expert. So I'll kind of leave that to your entire month. I'm sure you've got great talks.
Yeah. It's amazing how API security itself was, it's kind of like Google Cloud. It's something that's not spoken about enough, but we use it every day. And so, yeah, we have got a month coming in. So funny, just look out for that, man. Tom's got a comment. The auto-read mishap reminded me of Silicon Valley. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the account was going crazy and I had to scale it back, but unfortunately I didn't catch it soon enough and it got auto banned, but that happens.
Yeah, happens to the best of us. I have a question. Google acquires Simplify recently. What benefits does this acquisition build on the SOAR capability? SOAR itself is really interesting, but have you seen much come through from a SOAR perspective for Google Cloud?
So when it comes to Google Cloud and like SIMs and centralized logging, the way I've seen it leveraged a lot is that some companies will try to use BigQuery as a SIM, but in reality, it's kind of a place to store your data at a large scale. And they typically will leverage things like enterprise tools that do SIM work really well, any of their types of enterprise tools. But this is Google's way of trying to offer like a SIM-like experience inside of their cloud native platform. A lot of people try to use BigQuery, but you have to know like a SQL-based language to kind of traverse your logs, which traditional people that leverage SIMs maybe don't have that type of SQL background. So it makes it difficult, which is why you'll use like an enterprise SIM tool. But, you know, I haven't looked into this acquisition personally too much, but my understanding is that it's a way for them to have a presence in the SIM space and to offer like a cloud native way to do it. So you don't have to use an enterprise tool. Try to keep the money inside the platform.
Yeah, of course. Because I think the way this question was more, because I had a question around monitoring as well. So I think I was looking at this from that perspective. So people use BigQuery to store security logs. So, and I guess putting the SOAR function on it, like how would they react? I guess what kind of orchestration or response we would see from BigQuery? So you link it to a Google function, or how would you kind of respond to something that you may have run as a query in BigQuery, I guess?
Well, they have export features from BigQuery. So you can export it in a number of different ways. It also supports native JSON now as well, which a lot of logs in the cloud are JSON formatted. And previously you used to have to, if you wanted to store like JSON logs in BigQuery, you'd have to like create this schema yourself whenever you're creating your table or your database. But now they actually natively support JSON, and it'll store it in kind of a JSON format. So, you can export a lot of things from BigQuery in a lot of different formats. If you need it in JSON, you need it in CSV, you have a lot of options available to you. So really you would create these like SQL queries that would pull out data that matches, like you can think of it like a filter, a SQL query as a filter. And if anything returns, you export that resource name to like a PubSub topic, Cloud Function. It really depends upon how you set up your automation. So there's a lot of tools available to you. It really depends upon what you're familiar with and really what you want to get out of it.
Yeah. I think so. Maybe to your point, we really haven't seen the way Simplify has started being used for Google Cloud yet, but it's a matter of time. But it's really interesting, like from a monitoring perspective, there's a lot more custom automation that was going on in the GCP space. Like people would have taken that for granted in the AWS space and other places, but probably required a lot more customization in the Google Cloud space. So not a great answer, man. Hopefully that answered your question. Yeah. Confidential computing, Rama has a question. Can you share some views with respect to Google Cloud platform and what comparison with other computing, former computing?
Confidential computing is a really interesting feature or offering that Google released probably within the past year, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's for a very specific type of workload you might be running in the cloud, where you are running in like a regulated industry is probably the most common use case for it, where you don't want to share any of your hardware with other, because in the cloud, really you're sharing, unless you specify, you're sharing that hardware with other customers. And usually that's okay. But there are some regulated industries where you need everything to yourself. Everything needs to be encrypted. Your memory needs to be encrypted. And that's like in runtime, which is pretty difficult to do. But then you also can't share your hardware with other customers either. Like everything has to belong to you. And so Google released this concept of confidential computing, which as the name suggests, it's like pretty much everything is your own. It's locked down, everything encrypted. So really I see that as a good fit for regulated industries where the requirements that they have don't really translate with how the cloud operates normally because everything is kind of shared. So they needed to come out with something which is called confidential computing that kind of fills that gap again. It's for very specific workloads. So not a lot of people leverage it day to day. You'll pretty much know if you need it because you'll be required to do certain things. And that's what confidential computing is for.
Right. Okay. There you go. Hopefully that answers your question as well, Rama. That's a good one because I wasn't aware of confidential computing. So that's a good one for me to learn. Of course, question from Will. It seems like GCP is going in the direction of Apigee for API security. I'll take a look at their API proxies, which is pre-GA at the moment. Pretty cool stuff. Also, that's in Pani, if you were looking for API security, I think Will just gave you some suggestion over there. Please check that out.
Apigee is their API offering. Yeah. So it's like their API gateway. Yeah. If you need to put something like a serverless function, you need to expose it from an API, you would use Apigee.
It's like API is its own kind of like a beast, I would say. Yeah. There's a compute, then there is a whole serverless containers and all that. And then there is like API. Yeah. It's just like, we can go into another hour just talking about that as well. But I guess something that I'm mindful of your time as well here, because I'd love definitely like a Google Cloud, something that team for the month. So I'll definitely encourage people to kind of follow along for the rest of the month and maybe onwards as well. Because I definitely feel as we're kind of talking about this, there are two questions that come to mind. One is more on the maturity side of things, which you kind of have touched on throughout the episode as well, where the initial, based on what you're trying to protect, you could just start with the basic of CIS benchmark, CSPM, and kind of take it to the next level. Like, what's that next Netflix level of AWS automation that people talk about? What's that equivalent in GCP space for security automation? So that you would have seen, so people can like, oh, I need to aim for that.
Well, I mean, again, kind of a recurring theme is automate as much as you can, but do it in a safe way where you're confident that it's not going to interrupt workloads, because that's a quick way for people to think negatively about like security automation if it starts breaking things. So obviously, of course, kind of run it in dry mode for a little bit before it actually starts taking actions in your environments. But as far as kind of the what I would like to see GCP offer when it comes to like security automation, I would like to see kind of like blueprints or templates that Google has created. And they do have a lot of open source stuff, open source projects and scripts and actual remediations. They do offer that, but it's open source. It's not exposed in like the console, for example.
Right.
So your company or your organization would have to trust open source for one, which is not necessarily something you would see everywhere, because it's like, how do I know that the code is secure if anyone can work on it? It's like an argument I've heard a lot. So Google automated security, like scripts and remediations out there, they're just open source. So what I'd like to see is have that actually exposed via like the console. to make it easier for people to string together automation, whether it's through the console or you can interact with it via like an API. That's kind of what I would like to see the next step that they take. And who knows, they might expose that soon.
And where can people learn about Google Cloud Security? Because I think I clearly find myself struggling sometimes trying to understand and find some good resources for it. So where do people start even learning about Google Cloud Security?
Well, for me, security is just, it's something that is built in. And if you're looking to build anything on the cloud, security is a core component of that. Building things securely should be just the way that it is. So If you're looking to learn more about pure security on GCP, they do have like a cert where you could study for it. You don't even have to take the exam, but there's a lot of like online learnings that offer like Google Cloud Security classes that are geared towards passing the cert. But you could just take those classes and kind of learn about the security offerings that Google has, whether, you know, it's through like a Cloud Guru. I think everybody has heard of that. So they offer like a Google Cloud Security cert. And so you can study for it, quote unquote, study. And if you don't want to take the exam, you can learn about security that way. Google also has a ton of really awesome security documentation. They have great white papers about encryption, architecting securely. So really, I would just recommend doing a quick like Google, Yahoo, Bing search for GCP like security white papers. And that'll really kind of provide a lot of super useful information about how they think of
it. Yeah. So I'm assuming because how Google Cloud made that big announcement that we have the whole cybersecurity team or something that they're whatever, like, I don't know what is the word for it that they use, like cybersecurity A team or whatever they were calling it, that they're going to help out build all these blueprints and stuff. So I imagine that's on their way somewhere, but I don't imagine you've seen anything from them yet, because AWS has that whole best practice security white paper that people normally kind of send them to. Is there like an equivalent for GCP kind of thing as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, Google exposes a ton of best practices when it comes to security, whether it's a full-blown white paper or it's an individual section on some of their docs. So if you're interested about security for Cloud Functions, for example, you can pull up the Cloud Functions documentation. And on the left side, there's a dedicated security, a whole entire dedicated security section for that server. Right. Yeah. So whether it's about access control, whether it's about like general best practices, they do a really good job of exposing that and releasing it for free per service or just generally. So yeah, there's absolutely security best practices.
Oh, I'm smiling because it took Amazon at least 5 years before they even added that security section in the documentation. Because clearly security is number one priority, but was not the priority for documentation.
Yeah, and you'll find that for pretty much every service. Though there's a security section. It's the way their documentation is just...
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming in, man. That's pretty much the question that I had. So people get to know on, I guess, the other side of Jason as well. But for people who may have more questions about Google Cloud, cloud security, I guess, and they will reach out to you, where can they find you?
So I have a LinkedIn, but I'm not super active on there. I would say the best place to reach out to me is on Twitter. My username is @JasonADyke, which is my name, so pretty easy to remember.
To the show notes as well, so people get as well.
I am, yeah. And that's recent too. I'm not a big, like huge social media person, but Twitter for me was just an awesome way to get direct access to companies and to individuals. There's no barrier there. You can just follow them and tweet them if you want to reach out. And my direct messages are open. So I definitely recommend anyone that's curious about Google Cloud security in general to just reach out, and I'm fairly responsive.
And I'll add them to the show notes, and I'll also add the open source projects that you have running in the show notes as well, so people can check them out as well. But thank you so much for your time, man, and I just want to thank you from Pani as well. Thanks so much. So I'm looking forward to the next episode as well, but I'm looking forward to bringing you back again, because I think there's so many questions that I had I just could not go through, but they're clearly fairly popular topic and fairly popular person as well. For everyone else, I'll see you the next weekend, and thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you for listening to that episode of Cloud Security Podcast. If you found some new information from that episode, we would appreciate if you share it with others. Share it with us as well if you have any good feedback or good learnings from the episode. We are on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you don't find us there, you can always go on our website, www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv, to listen to the latest episode. We appreciate your support in helping us grow. It helps us bring more guests. It helps us support the channel. So really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and talk to you on the next episode.